I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Joan Myers Brown devoted her life to classical dance, but as a black ballerina in the 1940s, most American dance companies were closed to her, so she created her own. Her story, as told by author Brenda Dixon Gottschild, begins our Women's History Month biography series. We'll have that in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for a visit to the beauty shop. That's where we check in with our savvy women commentators to get their perspective on the week's news. And the internet is still blowing up, and the sponsors are still dropping out over what conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh said about Georgetown University law student Sandra Fluck. She'd spoken at a congressional hearing about why she believed her Catholic university should provide insurance coverage for contraception. And even some of Limbaugh's usual supporters found his comments about her offensive. And just as a warning, in order for us to, for you to understand what we're talking about, we have to use some of that language. And I just want to say that we know that this will be offensive to some people. So if this is not appropriate, this is a good time to step away for a minute. Limbaugh called Fluck a slut and a prostitute on his radio program. And he followed up the next day by adding this.
So Ms. Fluck and the rest of you feminazis, here's the deal. If we are going to pay for your contraceptives and thus pay for you to have sex, we want something for it. And I'll tell you what it is. We want you to post the videos online so we can all watch.
Well, you can imagine that the ladies in the beauty shop would like to talk about this. They're also going to weigh in on an interesting story about body image among African-American women and also an interesting take on how Latinas are perceived and how some feel they have to behave to fight the stereotype. So sitting in the chairs this week to talk about all this, Mary Kay Carey, former speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush. She's now a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report. Lene O'Neill Parker is an author and Washington Post style writer. Viviana Hurtado is blogger-in-chief of the website The Wise Latina Club, and Danielle Belton is author of the pop culture and politics blog The Black Snob, and they're all here in Washington. Ladies, thank you. So good to have you all here.
Oh, good to be here.
Thanks, Michelle.
Oh, let's talk a little bit about Rush. We heard from Sandra Fluck again on this, and she was on The View this week, and she talked a bit how she reacted to this, and she had a very, listen to what she had to say, like this very measured response. Here it is.
I don't think that a statement like this, issued saying that his choice of words was not the best, changes anything. And especially when that statement is issued when he's under significant pressure from his sponsors.
She's talking about the fact that he did issue kind of an apology of sorts, noting how measured she was in contrast to a lot of the people who've been writing about this. Mary Kay Carey, you say that you have listened to Limbaugh's show, that you have been a regular listener, but you wrote in your column that he crossed the line.
Yeah, I stopped listening several years ago because I just got tired of all the name-calling and the incivility, and this really took the cake for me. I wrote about it on Friday before he had started losing advertisers, but he, at that point, he hadn't yet. And I have to say, I thought long and hard before I hit send on that because I thought, what if I'm next, you know? There's just so much bullying, and I thought it was horrendous. And her response shows how even-keeled she was, that she was not some crazy person that he was going after. The biggest thing, I think, is, you know, there's three strategic mistakes that Limbaugh made here. The first was the Republicans had a galvanizing issue when it was on religious liberty, and we could really make some inroads with the Catholic vote, and he has totally wiped that out. Second, he has really damaged the women's vote for Republicans, I think. There are more independents that vote more than Republicans. There are more women than vote men. And so to have women and independents angry about this was really a dumb move. And then the third thing is, I think it makes good people not want to go into politics. And we saw that this week with Olympia Snow. At some point, you start losing people who say, I'll take a pass. I don't want to, you know, live this way. And so to me, it is not too late for the Republican leadership. I thought a lot of their responses were really lame with this same, not my choice of words, not what I would have said. I think some of these candidates and the speaker need to come out and say, this is wrong. It's insulting to women. It has no place in the Republican Party.
Why don't they? I mean, as you said, you know, Speaker John Boehner said, well, this is not the language. Mitt Romney says this is not the language I would have used. Boehner said, you know, poor choice of words. Language was inappropriate. Why don't they just come out and say, stop it. You're wrong. You're outrageous. You're obnoxious.
Well, because he's
got, we don't want to hear it.
15 million or whatever it is, listeners, 600 stations. It's the same reason I was thinking twice about hitting send on my blog. Like, what if they're next? You know, I think there's a real bullying aspect to this because of the power of his reach. He could instantly trash somebody. Look what he did to this poor woman. For the rest of her life, when her name gets Googled, this is what's going to pop up. You know, nobody wants that.
Danielle Belton, one of the reasons we're glad you could join us is that your blog does combine kind of pop culture and politics. One of the things that presidential candidate Rick Santorum said is that his comments were absurd, but he's an entertainer. And that entertainers, you know, say things.
I just love that when they go, like, whoops, it was all jokes. Like, even though I do a political show that I expect to be taken seriously, where I talk about issues of the day. But I say inflammatory things, but they're jokes. Like, why didn't you laugh? I mean, it's the same excuse that Ann Coulter throws up whenever she says something offensive and people do take offense. Her whole point is to offend people and shock people and get them talking. But you just can't cling to the joke mantle when your whole goal is to take, you want people to take you seriously.
Okay, but what about Jon Stewart? You know, Jon Stewart doesn't go out of his way to be nasty and mean to people. I don't think anybody thinks that, but he does have some pointed comments. But he'll say, I'm an entertainer. I'm not a journalist. I'm not in the same business.
Well, I mean, he's not, you know, he's being honest. He is a professional comedian and an actor.
But the president has appeared on his program and, you know, top political folks, top political pundits and political officials and would-be officials have appeared on his program. So people do take him seriously, too.
I'm aware that, you know, there is a lot of wiggle room in that area of who's entertainment and who's news. But Jon Stewart is a working comedian and actor who hosts a comedy news show that sometimes interviews serious people because of its reach. Rush Limbaugh purports himself to be a broadcast journalist who says inflammatory things. And when he gets called on it, he goes, it was just jokes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hypocritical.
Where does this go from here?
I'm actually kind of amazed that for the first time that there's some real serious consequences for him in the past. I mean, he said horrible things in the past. He has a whole history of saying really terrible things. And the fact that this was the one that finally made people go, you know what? I don't want my stuff advertised on a show. You know what? I'm going to actually organize a protest and do something about it. The fact that he even had to walk back anything, because normally he would never cede any ground, is kind of fascinating to me. And the fact that he does have even a few critics on the right, because most of them are so fearful of him. Just to hear that, it's been amazing to me. I don't know. I don't think he'll change anything. I think he'll, you know, a week from now, he'll probably go back and say something equally as insane. But it does demonstrate that his power is lessening if people feel they can speak out against it.
Viviana, where do you think this goes from here?
I think that the issue has to stay on civility, which is what Mary-Kate was writing about. And I think, Mary-Kate, high snaps to you. That was the smartest thing I read on
Thank
the
you.
Rush Limbaugh controversy. The issue is whether we start splitting hairs, whether it's a comedian, whether it's Ed Schultz or Bill Maher calling politicians like Sarah Palin or another radio show, talk show host like Laura Ingraham, also deplorable things, many that cannot be stated here.
Just Ed Schultz on MSNBC, but let's just say he apologized immediately and profusely and was suspended by MSNBC.
Right. So you're right. Afterwards, there's a question of procedure. But my point is, let's just, no matter what the person is, what the woman's background is, let's just declare a moratorium on trashing women. Whether you're from the left, whether you're from the right, whether you're a politician or a comedian, it's not cool. And you're seeing this time and time again with the examples that I cited. You see young women refer to each other. We've talked about this here in this space as, you know, calling each other the B word. That's not right. I gave up swearing for Lent. It's a very difficult thing to do, particularly when I'm late. Let's give up trashing women.
Okay,
public sphere.
Well, we'll see.
Can I say
one
more thing on Rush? I think he's going to get marginalized pretty quickly here. There was a poll that came out yesterday. Amongst Republicans, his approval rating has dropped like a rock. I think people are just going to start tuning the guy out. Don Imus came out and said, that was a really lame-o apology. If Imus says it's lame-o,
that's what was fascinating to me,
I think he'll start getting marginalized. I think fewer and fewer people are going to take him seriously.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the beauty shop, and we're speaking with columnist Mary-Kate Carey and blogger Viviana Hurtado and Danielle Belton and Washington Post reporter Lene O'Neill Parker. Lene, we haven't forgotten about you. We skipped past you on the Rush story because we want to talk about one of your stories. You wrote a piece recently for the Washington Post about a new survey that was jointly done with the Post and Kaiser Health News. that found out that black women on average are heavier than white women, but are happier with their bodies.
Right, right.
Interesting.
Well, and
surprising to you?
Not actually. I mean, I had heard of various studies that supported this, but also just looking at the culture. There's just an aesthetic that is more supportive of a range of different body types among black women. And they can go from small, and they can also go up to large and very large. Now, this is not to say black women are immune from the prevalent body images and what's held up as ideals, more that they have a more expansive tool set for not internalizing the worst and the most harmful of those images. And you see it over and over in the research. The Post Kaiser Family Foundation poll found that, as you said, black women who were even heavier than white women who were overweight or obese had better and higher levels of self-esteem than white women who were average size. And a University of Florida study that I cited in the article indicated that as well, just that they weren't internalizing, that they had these better tools.
Danielle, what do you think about that? What do you make of that? Because I know you've written about this.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is I feel like with as an African-American woman, and I feel like this is common with a lot of us, is that we're asked to adhere to this impossible Western idealized beauty standard. And it's impossible for white women and other women as well. It is an impossible standard no one can meet. It's a way to make women feel bad. So they're constantly thinking their worth is tied up in their looks and their bodies as opposed to who they are internally. Right. And you have a choice how you're going to deal with that. You can either obsess about it and be depressed, or you can reject it and say, you know what? I'm not going to play this game. This game it's rigged for me to lose. So it's worthless. I'm going to focus on me and my... Exactly. I'm going to opt out. And the reality is, if more white women opted out of feeling like they had to compete with this ideal as well, if all women opted out of it, I'd imagine everyone would feel better regardless
of
their size.
On the other hand, black women are more likely to be overweight or obese or to have excess weight. Let's put it that way. So you have to ask, is opting out really the best idea?
I mean, I feel like there's other factors at the play here when we're talking about African-American women and weight. A lot of it has to do with poverty, and it has to do with food poverty, where if you live in an urban center or you live in a very rural county, what options you have, what food you can get and afford really changes.
Mary Kay, do you mind if we talk about this on the flip side of this? I'm interested in you as our, I don't want to make you the token white person, but speaking for all white people.
That's all right, I'll take
if you
it.
Can. How do you read these findings, number one? And I'm interested, and also as the mother of daughters, you know, how do you impart the message that you are not your hair, you are not your body? On the other hand, you do want people to be healthy, you do want them to get exercise, but you don't want them to think that that's all you care about. What are you doing? How are you working that?
Well, I can tell you my story is a little unique in that my daughter got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 5. And Children's Hospital pulled me aside very quickly and said, you need to be aware that girls with type 1 have very high incidence of eating disorders. And so you should not be stepping on a scale every day. You should not be talking how fat you are. You should be eating a healthy diet. Everybody in the house is on healthy food, lots of exercise. And it's not that I wasn't going in that direction anyway, but it just made me very aware of it. And so I think we're a little different in our family because we've had to live with this and be so careful about body image because of her high risk. She's doing great, and we've never had any problems, but it makes you realize, you know, would they have said that to me if I was an African-American mom? Probably not. I think that I felt was sort of the stereotype of the kind of high-strung mom that could be a problem. And so I can understand that there's a cultural side to this. I did a little research when I was reading your article. I think part of this has to do with people who go to church. And I think there's a culture that the numbers of the African-American community are much higher for people who are regular churchgoers. Yeah. And I think if you sort of believe in a higher power, you're not so worried about the latest, you know, do these jeans make me look fat or what's in this magazine.
Interesting idea.
I think people of faith are a little more grounded on this sort of stuff.
Okay, but then why are we spending thousands of dollars on weaves? Just thought I'd mention it. Sorry. I'm sorry.
There's a definite secular component. That may be true, but it's also true that plenty of folks who go to the clubs as much as they go to church are also not as worried about it, and they're not tying it to spirituality. More like what Danielle said, if I look at this woman and she's blonde and blue-eyed with hair to her waist, she's already not me. her being a size two is one more way that she's not me. And it's a tyranny, and we just don't have developed ways not to internalize.
Okay, one more thing about the whole question of women and image in the couple of minutes that we have left. There's an article that caught our eye by Sarah Ines Calderon on the website Jezebel. It's called Why Aren't Latinas Allowed to Get Angry? And she argues that the stereotype of the spicy Latina has consequences in the workplace. And as a consequence of that, this kind of stereotype that they're like, we all know, we don't need to do it. That she thinks it has an impact that Latina women in the workplace might be underreacting to things that they should and less forceful than they could be because they're fearful of the stereotype. And Viviana, as the wise Latina, what do you think about that? Do you think that that's been true in your experience?
I definitely believe that I feel that I've been held to a different standard in the workplace, both as a Latina and as a woman. I've always felt that I had to work twice as hard. I had to be the first one in the office or the first, or 10 minutes before class, and I was the one who stuck around and went to office hours or I stayed past what everyone did. I always felt that I had to work harder. And so I guess as I read Sara Ines's piece, there was some resonance, I believe, but I have to say I rejected it. And I think the reason for that is that the last thing we want is to victimize ourselves, complaining about how we're being victimized, and then all of a sudden we victimize ourselves. For example, I'd like to talk a little bit about how Latino culture does a lot to tell women what you can do and what are no-go zones. And we didn't talk about that that article.
Yeah, so it's not all external. Some of it's internal. Well,
exactly.
More and to talk about. Then there's that whole angry black woman thing. So certainly there's that piece that we could talk about next time. Viviana Hurtado is the blogger-in-chief of the website The Wise Latina Club. Also with us, Mary Kate Carey, former speechwriter for President George H.W. Bush, now a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report. Lene O'Neill Parker is a reporter and writer for The Washington Post. She's the author of I'm Every Woman, Remixed Stories of Marriage, Motherhood, and Work. And Danielle Belton, author of The Black Snob, the pop culture and politics blog, all here in Washington, D.C. in our NPR studios. Ladies, thank you.
Great to meet you.
Thank you.